Today, we're going to dive into medical school admissions with a director of admissions at an osteopathic medical school. We're going to dive into why clinical experience is more than just checking a box on your application. We're going to talk about practical healthcare exposure and busting the myth that stellar grades are all you need to get in to medical school. And we're going to talk about academic standards and making sure that students are qualified for medical school, and also embracing holistic review. All that and more coming up on the pre-med years, session number 578. Hello, and welcome to the pre-med years, where we believe that collaboration, not competition, is key to your success. I'm your host, Dr. Ryan Gray, and in this podcast, we share with you stories, encouragement, and information that you need to know to help guide you on your path to becoming a physician. Welcome to the pre-med years. Thank you so much for joining me today. I love when we get directors of admissions or deans of admissions on the podcast because you get to hear straight from the horse's mouth, as they say. Someone who is helping make those decisions at a medical school. Who gets in? Who doesn't? And I think there are a lot of myths out there into what is important in the medical school application process. What are the surefire ways to get in, or what exactly keeps you out? And today we're going to dive into a lot of that. It's one of my goals here on the pre-med years and at medical school headquarters is to bust these myths that continue to get perpetuated on Reddit or Student Doctor Network and elsewhere. So hopefully this is a great episode for you. It's only one point of view. Remember, this is just one person for one medical school, and not every medical school is the same or has the same point of view, which I think is a very important thing to remember. And I think it's a good thing that it's not all one big monolith when it comes to medical school admissions. All right, so let's go ahead and jump in. We're going to talk to Austin, who's the director of admissions at Burrell College of Osteopathic Medicine. Let's go ahead and say hi to Austin. Austin, welcome to the pre-med years. Thanks for joining me.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to chat with you. I love talking to admissions people, you as a director of admissions, because I just love getting behind the scenes. One of my big missions when I started medical school headquarters was to really talk to the people making decisions and to increase as much as possible the transparency of this process for pre-med students. So I appreciate when I get to talk to people like you. And we've chatted before at different conferences, but I'm excited to kind of sit down with you for a little bit here and spill all of your secrets for Burrell College of Osteopathic Medicine. What do you think?
Sounds great. Let's get into it.
All right. So what does a student really have to do to get in? Now, let's start at the beginning. I don't think it's a typical goal for most people to wake up and be like, I want to be a director of admissions at a medical school. How did you get into this world?
Yeah. So like everyone out there who has gone to a college before, right? I started my bachelor's degree and didn't really know what exactly I wanted to do. And so when I finished school, I started at an undergraduate institution, the admissions office in financial aid, and really discovered a passion for working with students. So for myself, I understand that I am not someone who's gifted in the sciences or STEM. That's not where my gifting is. And so for myself, it's really nice to be able to give back to the healthcare industry in a unique way where I'm never going to be someone in a hospital. That's not where I feel led to go, but I can help others reach their dreams. And so being in admissions is great because I get to see other dreams come true through individuals in our two campuses.
All right. But I will counter, the majority of the applications you're seeing, you are crushing those dreams. How do you balance that, right? Because obviously, it's fantastic. You get to accept these students, mm-hmm. and they come onto campus and you get to watch them flourish and shine and grow and graduate and go be a doctor. There's lots of students who aren't getting in. Some qualified, many aren't. On the flip side of that kind of realizing the dreams, how do you deal with knowing that there's so many students out there that you just wish you could be like, just do these things and you'll be good for next cycle?
Yeah, it's tough. In a perfect world, every medical school would have 50,000 seats available. We could realistically educate all of those people. Like, that would make me so happy to do.
But then we would have too much supply of doctors, and our salaries would be $10 a piece for a year.
Yeah, too much supply, but then also quality too. So I know with other programs, when it comes to nursing and all these, you talk to students and they're like, I wish there were more seats available. And I definitely can resonate with that. However, we have to make sure we're able to provide the best quality education too. And so what I think when we talk about students who don't get accepted into a particular cycle is that sometimes a no now doesn't mean a no next year or next cycle. Yeah. So I like to talk in extremes. For myself, if I took the MCAT, nobody would want me to become a physician. I was so low on the MCAT because that's not where I'm gifted.
471, one point lower than
them. Or they wouldn't grade it at all, honestly. They'd just be like, we're going to pass on this one. So it's good that no one's going to be offering me admission.
Yeah.
So there'd be steps that I would need to take to get into good standing. And so like what we do is we do provide post-cycle admission advising appointments to work with students, let them know, here's an area of improvement that would help better your odds next cycle for your specific application. So that's one thing that I think we can kind of rest on here at Burrell, at least, is that we do provide those advising appointments, which makes me sleep a little bit better at night for those who don't get accepted.
How do you offer those? Because there are thousands of students who aren't getting into your school. You obviously, I'm assuming, don't have the bandwidth to offer that to everyone. Do you offer it to a select group who like just miss the cutoff, so to speak? How do you offer those?
I don't know if I should say this here now that you just said that, but we offer it to anyone who submitted an application who did not matriculate.
Okay.
So that's a couple of thousand applicants who any of them are welcome to schedule an appointment with one of our advisors.
Yeah.
And they will get an individualized one-on-one advising appointment with them. So we have a good chunk of students that take advantage of it every year, but we always encourage students to really consider that as an option.
In your experience, what is the number one reason why students aren't getting in, besides stats? Because that's the easy one. Be like, you're just not academically qualified.
Yeah, I think on the academic side, that's kind of the easy one. And that's what a lot of students do focus on.
Yeah.
Sometimes it is tone, and not only supplemental essays, primary essays too, but then also when it comes to the interview. Interviews are very, very important. And so when you are interviewing with faculty members for us, other schools, of course, there's other people you're interviewing with. Sometimes there's some red flags there. And sometimes there are red flags as little as not sharing enough information. And so not expanding enough on a question, but there's a fine line because sometimes expanding too much on one question is also not a desired outcome. So sometimes we really do see it will come down to the interview itself and what is shared there.
Let's dive into that a little bit more, right? Tone. I read lots of applications. I have a series called Application Renovation where I give my thoughts of why students don't get in, especially high stat students, because that's, I think, for the pre-med world, I think in general, there's lots of assumptions that it's like, oh, if my stats are good, I'll get into med school.
Yeah.
And fortunately, I'm not going to say unfortunately, fortunately, that's not true, right? It's not just if you're super smart, you can be a doctor. You also have to have good communication skills and empathy and compassion and all these other things that make a good doctor. I read lots of applications and oftentimes, the writing and potentially the interviewing as well comes across as arrogant, right? I'm not calling the student arrogant, but how they are portraying themselves comes across as arrogant. Is that kind of along the lines that when you say the tone, is it arrogance? Is it defiance? Is it what kind of tone do you see maybe most common?
Yeah, I don't think it's most common overall, but I think one of the things I would speak to is sometimes it is a little bit of an arrogance. And it's so tricky applying to medical school because here we are asking you to talk about yourself and share who you are as an individual. And there's a fine line between sharing who you are and what you're proud of, which is awesome, and then being like, I am changing the world by blank, blank, blank. And so sometimes it's looking at how a student represents their experiences. And so if you're assisting in a ER and you're scribing, you are not resuscitating patients.
Yep.
That's different. And so I've never had someone say that exactly, but sometimes elevating experience to such a high level that it's like, this is the role that changed everything for all of healthcare. Mm-hmm. That's really what we see sometimes. Now, it's not very common, but there's a handful of those every year. I think on the other side too, when we ask a student about what's an area of improvement, sometimes not understanding where their areas of improvement should be. So maybe they have a decent MCAT score and they're struggling in another area. Maybe they don't have enough healthcare experience. And when we ask them that question, they're focusing on their the 1B they got. Well, the limited hours of healthcare experience might be a higher category. So for us, it really is a holistic view. We are balancing all those things. And I think that's what makes our process really beautiful is that it's not just those metrics.
Yeah.
Like you said, a perfect MCAT score and perfect GPA, that student might struggle in other areas that another student might have strengths in. And we need a balance in healthcare. And so I'm proud of our admissions process for weighing that balance.
You mentioned clinical experience. I think for me, one of the most common reasons is just a lack of clinical experience, why students don't get in, which doesn't allow them to understand why they're here, why they're applying to medical school. And a lot of those students, it really just looks like, hey, I'm smart enough to be a doctor, therefore I want to be one. What is your view of clinical experience? Because I was actually talking to another physician a week or two ago whose kid wants to go to medical school now. And we were talking about clinical experience and shadowing. She's like, that doesn't make them better doctors. I'm like, absolutely. Like, I'm not saying that's the goal here. And so we talked about it for a little bit, but I would love to hear from your experience when you're looking at an application, that role of clinical experience and shadowing on an application, right? It's kind of an unwritten requirement. And I wish schools would just be like, we want clinical experience. We're not going to tell you how much, but you have to have some. What is that goal for you?
Yeah, I think that's a fair request. The reason we specifically don't require it, quote unquote, and we encourage it is because for our New Mexico campus, we have students who are in some communities sometimes that don't have access to healthcare, and of course, COVID. That is such a wild thing that happened where some students weren't even allowed to set foot in a hospital, especially in our state. It was pretty restricted. The value to shadowing and getting that medical experience, though, allows you to sample something before you get there.
Yep.
So before I buy 3 pounds of candy, I want to try the candy first once, right?
Is this going to give me a bellyache or not?
Yeah, not to eat 3 pounds in one sitting, of course, but... medical school is a big commitment.
Yeah.
Not only time, effort, lots of effort there, leading up to it, studying for the MCAT, residency program, all of that's taking place, as well as the financial component. And so I think it would be disingenuous for colleges to want to bring in students who don't have any medical experience, because it feels like almost like a bait and switch.
Yeah.
I want students to come in where I have confidence saying, this person really wants to be here. Now that can grow, and maybe they don't know the exact area they are feeling led to. So maybe you don't know if you want to go into dermatology, but you know you want to be a physician and you want to help people in that specific area of medicine. We can hone some of that later on. But I think it's very important. While every school is going to have their own internal metrics on how they gauge that, they don't share outside. I think it's important for students to not worry so much about what the school is wanting and to focus in on what they're able to do and how they can grow their experience, because they don't know if my metric is 1 hour or 1,000 hours.
Yeah.
So do what you can and let us kind of dictate what that looks like behind the scenes.
So you mentioned, you don't know if my metric is 1 hour or 1,000 hours. Why aren't you guys more transparent about your rubric or however you're scoring applications? Why can't we get medical schools to be more transparent about this?
Yeah, that's something that I've struggled with. I've been here in the medical field for recruiting for 2 years now, and my background was in the public sector, where everything was public. Everything we did was very upfront, and here's exactly the way everything is reviewed and operated. The reason why it has to be a little bit secretive is for students to not be able to put down the exact requirements. We're working with high achieving students. So if I tell someone a blank score is going to mean acceptance, then that allows them to have exact metrics to shoot for. And so what I have found is that by being a little bit more vague when it comes to experience in particular,
yeah,
it allows students to shine in their own way and not focus so much on a rubric. We see a lot of students that come in that know how to check the boxes. I think that's not uncommon for medical students. And I want to hear about why a student wants to be a physician, not just, oh, I got blank hours of medical experience.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've never thought it from that point of view, especially the experiences side. From a stats perspective, I will continue to ask for schools to be transparent in terms of cutoffs and stuff.
Yes.
But from an experience standpoint, it's an honor system. Right? Mm-hmm. We don't have the bandwidth. You all don't have the bandwidth to verify all of the experiences that students are putting on an application. And so if you're like, hey, Burrell, to qualify for an interview, you have to have 152 hours of clinical experience and 36 hours of shadowing and 16 hours of research. And all of a sudden, you start to see all these applications hitting exactly those numbers or just over. So all the students are like, hey, give me my interview, right? It's all an honor system. So I understand definitely not putting out specific numbers like that, which is great.
And just to add to that, so it's also important, too, that we do have students. If we look at the United States and where students are coming from, you have students from the most populous areas where they have exclusive access to kind of whoever they want to shadow, to students that might be coming from a community of 100 people and the closest doctor is 2 hours away. And so if we were to put here are minimums when it comes to volunteer work and shadowing experience, that is automatically excluding a populace that really might have a lot to give to medicine and might make amazing physicians. Mm-hmm. And so by leaving it a little bit more open-ended allows us to have that holistic approach to the admissions process as well as our education.
Yeah, it gives a lot more flexibility for you as an admissions committee to find those people who are gonna make great physicians who just didn't have the resources or accessibility to do the things that most other students are doing.
Exactly.
Which makes sense. I want to go back. You mentioned not wanting to kind of be what the med school wants you to be, however it was you said that. And I remember speaking to a dean of admissions last year at a conference who said this same exact thing. He goes, you know, I hate when students ask, like, tell me what you're looking for. And he's like, we're not looking for anything. We want to see who you are and then let us evaluate you to see how you're going to fit with our class and understand, like, are you going to be a good doctor? Do you understand why you want to be a doctor? All that kind of good stuff. Give your thought process around that, because so often students are asking, like, what's the formula? What's the checklist? Just give it to me. And I loved having that conversation with that dean, because I use that all the time now. It'd be like, stop trying to fit what the med school wants you to be. Just be yourself. And just like anything in life, you're not going to be a good fit for every person, for in the dating world, for every school, in the medical school application process. Talk about kind of that mentality for you and when you're talking to students and you get that question, like, just what are you looking for?
Yeah, I get that question all the time of what could I add to my application that's going to make me stand out? And to remain equitable, I have to be careful in what I share with students, right? I can't give one student an advantage over another. And so I always share exactly what you were saying. I want to hear who you are. Mm-hmm. If you are blank type of student, if you're a traditional student, tell me why that's your advantage. If you're a non-traditional student, tell me why that's your advantage. I want to hear what's on your heart. I think a lot of times students are seeing so much content out there when it comes to opinion based from other applicants, or they're comparing themselves.
Or random doctors who are now podcasters and YouTubers.
Yeah, you have experience though, but it's funny, you know, well, my uncle said I should do blank, or I need to shock everyone with my personal statement so much in the first sentence. And now it's like trauma dumping on the application. And so what we really want to see is, I want to hear who you are and what you're passionate about. Yeah. It's pretty unbelievable to me how good admissions offices are, including us, at filtering through stuff that has been amped up a little bit and fluffed a lot. And so I would rather have less fluff and hear what's on your heart. Same in the interview. When our students interview with faculty members, they don't want rehearsed answers.
Yeah.
And that shouldn't be shocking to hear. We want to hear what you think. I think about it in my experiences with physicians in the clinic. I want to work with a physician that doesn't just regurgitate information to me, but that can articulate it not only accurately, but can speak to me like a human. And I think sometimes in the application process for medical school, students forget that we're humans and we want to hear from a human as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The amped up crazy story kind of trauma dumping you mentioned, it's gotten so bad lately, and I often will tell students, and actually right before talking to you, I was interviewing a student who's starting med school in a couple months, and for the podcast, and she had mentioned when she was starting to get into her application, she was like, oh, how do I stand out, how do I do this? And she thankfully listens to the podcast and watches the YouTube videos and heard me say, like, stop trying to stand out and just be you. And and you are what will connect, hopefully, with a person reading your application, not just, oh, I'm compassionate. Like, do you think you're the most compassionate applicant? Do you think you have the best compassion? Because that, to me, is like when students will say, I'm compassionate, I'm empathetic, selling themselves is how I often will frame it. To just stop trying to sell yourself, because there's no way to quantify how compassionate you are compared to all the other applicants. So when someone's reviewing your application, how are they supposed to score that? Right? To me, I just tell them, like, they just want to connect with you. They just want to understand who you are, understand your passions, what's driving you, your motivations, all that kind of stuff. And it's just, to me, I boil it down to just very simple human basic connection of the world that you all live in. So,
And I think it's tough because it is so simple, but it's so complicated.
Simple, but not easy.
And it's, yeah. And I think that's good in a way. Yeah. And so through the application, I always just recommend students do what you think is best and tell me who you are the best way you can through your experience, through your application. That's what we want to see. And I think that's pretty consistent with most medical schools.
How do you balance that with the public perception, both other students applying and the lay public, patients, right, who will see complaints or lawsuits that are filed going, hey, like, I have better stats than these other people that got in. Why am I not getting in? How do you communicate that to students, or talking to students right now with me? Someone who's not going to get into med school their first cycle or second cycle, helping them understand how to evaluate, kind of how to move forward.
Yeah, it's a very individual thing, which is encouraging. As a patient, or I see a physician myself, I don't want physicians to be someone that just checked the academic boxes and that was it. I want someone who's well-rounded. And so for us, that's why we do have a holistic admissions review process. So we have recommendations when it comes to MCAT, recommendations when it comes to science GPA, because we understand that all because a student is 1 point off of a recommendation doesn't necessarily mean they're not going to be a great physician. when we opened up, we saw people come in who were trailblazers and who have gone into or out of their residency programs now and going into their practice. And some of them might have been overlooked prior. And we don't want to just overlook someone because of one metric. And so while metrics are important, you need to weed out people like myself, should be weeded out very quickly. We need to make sure that we're being inclusive and getting not just one type of student. And so for us, that's where those application advising appointments come in really clutch for students afterwards. So if it is something that came up in the interview, maybe they were standoffish or they never made eye contact during the whole entire interview session, that's something that we can share with them. If it's test scores, we can say, hey, taking the MCAT again might be something that's wise to increase your scores to get more in line with our average.
Yeah. That eye contact one, it's funny you mentioned that. I literally was talking to a student the other day who had a very successful application cycle in terms of interviews, had 6 interviews, I think.
Okay.
But wasn't accepted to any school. And so she got on a call with me and we were chatting and she didn't make eye contact at all, right? And obviously it's a very forced world of looking through Zoom, but it was very interesting. And whether there's some neurodiversity at play or something, I asked her, I'm like, I want to ask, because right now you're not looking at me, right? You're not looking at the screen communicating with me. You're kind of off in La La Land looking somewhere else. She goes, oh yeah, I got that feedback from one of my interviewers. So it's very interesting to see these things kind of play out in the real world. When you're looking at an applicant, I'll give you an example. Happens all the time for me. Students typically with lower stats, they have 3.1, 3.2, 2.9 maybe GPA. Their MCAT score maybe high 490s. But they say, hey, Dr. Gray, like, I have amazing clinical experience. I've been a nurse for 20,000 hours, right? I've been a nurse for years and years and years. My clinical experience will make up for it. And I cringe a little bit because this term holistic philosophy, holistic review gets thrown around. But I often have to remind students, yes, but they have to make sure you're academically qualified first. Talk about the thought process that you all have at Burrell in terms of holistic review of an application with that kind of academic side as well.
Yeah. So something we actually moved to this year are recommendations for MCAT and for science GPA in particular. And the reason we made this change is in the past, we've had students who maybe excelled in experience, excelled in GPA.
Yeah.
But they were 1 point below our prior requirement. And so their application would hit a hard wall and they weren't considered on our campus.
Yeah.
And what we started seeing is that there's nuance to an application. I am super proud to work at an institution where we have really started to review everything and say, if we're a DO program, is our admission process holistic as well? And so reviewing an applicant saying, yes, there are metrics that we need to make sure students hit, but having a strict cutoff of 1 point and not reviewing the other part of the application is a little bit disingenuous. So for us, we are reviewing the full application that a student submits. So if a student meets our minimum requirements, which would be a citizenship and having a valid MCAT on file, we will review from a human that application. And there's students out there who are falling below by a point or two that might excel in other ways. And as someone who wants to sleep well at night, that makes me sleep really well at night, knowing that we truly are giving everyone a fair shot at medical school.
Yeah. How does that feedback loop happen? Because my concern would be letting in students who academically aren't ready for medical school. Not to say they can't be doctors and won't be great doctors, but academically just aren't ready yet for medical school. Do you have a feedback loop talking with like the director of student affairs, people like that, so that students that you let in, the ones who struggle, you go, what did we miss in the application, or what were their stats coming in that may have given us some idea of their potential to struggle in medical school?
Yeah, so that's something we do look at. So we have our admissions governance council that's made up primarily of faculty who are voting members. I and a few others sit on their ex officio. So we're non-voting members, where they're more to provide the information. Mm-hmm. But they're the ones who are doing that research and saying, okay, of students who end up not continuing on in their education at Burrell, what was the reason behind there? Mm-hmm. Now, we know life happens. There are outside of students' control that are not academically focused. And so I can't go into the details per se of that research, but what we are seeing is that we are taking a look at that and saying, is there something that's coming up in the application process that is an automatic red flag? Do, you know, 510s fail out, but 509s do perfect and 511s do perfect? Unfortunately, that's not going to happen. If it did, I would be so happy because we would just remove people and go on our merry way.
Yeah.
But it's so much more nuanced than that. So we are looking at that data internally to make sure that we're not just bringing students in disingenuously and saying, you're going to be a great student here at Burrell, and they end up not being able to successfully complete the program. Because while I want to boast about holistic admissions process, if we can't have our students pass COMLEX or get into residency, that affects that student in particular, of course, but that affects us too. So we have to balance that need with our application process.
Yeah, and I've been trying to help students understand that obviously going to medical school, getting into tons of debt, and then not having a degree or a job at the other end is horrible, because education debt is basically impossible to get rid of. But also, from an accreditation standpoint, you as a DO school, COCA would be all over you going, hey, like, what's going on with your program that you're not graduating these people? They're failing out, whatever, they're not matching. So it is a reflection, and you definitely need to make sure you stay accredited, because that's apparently an important thing in education.
Very important, yes.
When you look at an application cycle, what makes a successful application cycle for an admissions office?
Oh, wow. What a question. I really think it comes at the very end. So for me, it's when we walk into the orientation room, which takes place the week before school, and I look around at the faces, and I don't see everyone there just sitting quietly. I see people chatting, and I see a unique group of individuals from all over geographically, different shared experiences. When I see those conversations taking place and I see that class throughout the year, really, to me, looking back, I say that was a successful cycle. Now, of course, there's goals of filling a class, having metrics a certain place. All those things are very important, but I really want to make sure that we have a class that is cohesive and is a unique group.
Yeah, I talk about that a bunch with students. Like, they're building a community, right? They want a community. They don't want all alpha personalities and stuff like that, because it just won't work to build that community like that. Last year, I think it was last year, may have been end of 2022, whenever it was, SCOTUS overturned affirmative action in this country. I think everyone was prepared for it. I don't think it was a surprise that they overturned it. How did that affect medical school admissions, do you think? And did it affect anything at your program?
Yeah, so I'll speak for us. I think every program in particular can do their own thing and have their own process behind the scenes, because it is so secretive on how those rubrics really do work. For us, very little had to change, which I think is probably the thing I'm most proud of from this last year. When we started looking at our admissions process, yes, that information was being brought in from a COMIS that was being brought in automatically into our system, and so it was there, but it wasn't being leveraged in a sense to where we were giving a certain group an advantage or a certain group a disadvantage. And the reason I'm so proud of what we've done is, with the SCOTUS decision, we basically blinded ourselves from that information coming in. But other than that, our process didn't change. Mm-hmm. And why I'm so proud is we have the second most diverse DO class in the nation.
Wow.
And it wasn't from, as our chief diversity officer says, you know, we're not taking, oh, I'll have a tall person to check that box, I'm going to check this box over here. It was really saying, who's going to be a good fit at Burrell? Mm. Do they fit with who we, what we're passionate about. And if so, we think they're going to be a great student here. And that allows to have a diverse class. So when our chief diversity officer came in, she was joking with us. She said, when I started here, you didn't have one prior. You all had just won an award for diversity. And I hadn't even started yet. Mm. And she's like, why am I here type of thing? And there's always room to grow in that. And so it was a joke, of course. But that's just the way we are. And that's how we started the school. And that's what we want to continue, is having a diverse group in all aspects. And I really do think our admissions process is able to create that class coming in.
I hear from a lot of pre-med students that they can't apply to DO schools because they haven't shadowed a DO. Talk about shadowing DOs and DO letters of recommendations for the osteopathic application process and the myths that are out there that never seem to go away.
There are never myths out there. well, hopefully I can make at least one student out there feel a little bit better. At Burrell, we used to require a physician letter. And what we started seeing is that some students don't have access to a physician in a particular sense. They might have other areas they've been able to shadow, mm-hmm. but they might not be able to get that physician letter. So that's now a recommendation. It's not a requirement. And so even if a student's unable to provide a physician letter, I would encourage them to apply to Burrell. But even beyond that, you might not have a DO in your area. Mm-hmm. And so why should we hold that over a student's head if the nearest DO is 5 hours from them? They might not be able to do that. So I always encourage students to consider a DO application, even if they don't have that, because each school is going to look at it differently. I know there's a lot of schools out there, MD and on the DO side, that's hard to know what school requires exactly what on the application process. Yep. But doing a little bit of due diligence on the Choose DO portal, and you can see those different things for the DO schools in particular.
Yeah, we're building a lot of that into our software platform Mapped, to where it'll all be in one place, because that's one of the challenges with the Choose DO Explorer and then the MSAR for the MD schools, yep. like all in one place and for free. I love that Choose DO Explorer is free. I won't talk about that other one. so that's from a DO perspective. Let's talk about the personal statement. The personal statement, my point of view was, when a COMIS made the decision, or the member bodies of a COMIS made the decision to go, let's change our personal statement length from 4,500 to 5,300 to match AMCAS. To me, that was a signal that just says, we want more students to apply to DO schools. We want to make it easy. Just give us the same personal statement. You don't need two personal statements. My point of view has always been, you can use the same personal statement for both. The schools, Burrell and other schools in their secondary process, will often ask, hey, why are you interested in osteopathic medical school? So that covers the osteopathic side. The mm-hmm. personal statement for me is still, why do you want to be a doctor? Period, generically, right? What are your thoughts on a good personal statement? It doesn't have to be DO focused for that DO application.
Yeah, I think there's a right and wrong way to do everything. So I think of when people apply to jobs and they have their cover letter, there's very clearly generic cover letters out there. And there's also very clearly cover letters out there where people forget to put the company name in correctly in the four spots. And so I always tell students, like, if you're going to copy over that over, make sure that it still makes sense for a DO school to read. If it is talking about allopathic medicine, and if you're very passionate about that's the only way you should go, you probably shouldn't use that for an osteopathic medicine application prompt. So I think that's okay to do. If you really want to have the best odds, though, it would make sense to go over it and adapt it to the particular discipline you're looking at. Thankfully, not every school has their own application. While we might have supplemental applications where we can ask our own questions, not every school has their own personal statement you have to submit to. Yeah. Because then I would expect a student to put Burrell in and be very specific to what we believe and why we believe it. Thankfully, students get a little bit easy. It's the one, I say it's the one easy part, quote unquote, of the application process. It's one personal statement for DOs and one personal statement for the MD side.
Yeah. I know very close with your predecessor, Courtney Lewis, former director of admissions at Burrell, who's now on our team at medical school headquarters. She is very opinionated when it comes to students answering the kind of why DO world, where a lot of times they'll just say, oh, holistic philosophy. Oh, it's just like very generically, very superficially, like, have you looked any further into this world? Talk about how students can actually look into this world, this osteopathic medicine world, and understand for themselves what's out there so that they can communicate it authentically with osteopathic medical schools.
Yeah. Depending on their accessibility to healthcare, I think seeing a DO as a patient, I know for me, I started seeing a DO before I knew there was a difference, in letters. I didn't even know that existed. And looking back on it, I started to see some differences in their schooling and the discipline that they received. The other thing too, we live in an amazing time, which is a double-edged sword, but of having available information online. And so seeing information online and applying it to their life, whether it be how a DO went about treating a patient, YouTube has so many different DOs out there who are providing their perspective of osteopathy and how it impacts their patients' lives. Seeing something like that, I think, can really go a far way for a student and understanding beyond just the, here's what a DO is, here are the pillars of being a DO. It's always great to look past that. And what I've found when I talk to students individually at events is that they really resonate with the principles of being a DO and that holistic view of medicine and understanding the person is mind, body, and spirit. They're like, oh, that checks out. I understand why that would be something I would look into.
Yeah. As we wrap up here, Burrell College of Osteopathic Medicine just opened a sister campus in Florida. Talk about the expansion and what that means for potentially students in New Mexico or if anything.
Yeah. So our Florida campus is going to be what's called an additional location. And so I think primarily the most important part there is that it's inheriting everything that we've done here in New Mexico over there. So we just received not only full accreditation from COCA, but it was with an exceptional outcome. So it's a 10-year COCA accreditation that extends to our Florida campus too. So it's not just a new medical school, it's a new medical school with everything that's tried and true here in New Mexico. That campus too, we will have full human cadaveric dissection available.
Yay!
On both campuses.
Love it.
We're able to offer not just digital resources, but having that hands-on approach. That's something that I'm really excited about for Florida.
Yeah. I'm old school. I think I wouldn't recommend going to a non-cadaveric anatomy lab, but I know they're hard to come by and it's an expensive program to run, but
yeah. And I'm a technology person. I love technology, but there's something different. Talking with our anatomy faculty about looking at certain type of nerves in a textbook or a digital resource, it's represented the proper way, the correct way. But we all are different on the inside. Yeah. And so being able to see that and having that human connection too, I think goes really far. So I'm so excited we're able to offer that in our Florida campus. Both campuses are going to be in sync when it comes to lectures. So students might have a live faculty in Florida, and then in New Mexico, they would be piped in on our huge LED screens or vice versa. But after a lecture, though, those shared times kind of end because you don't want to be doing anatomy with a Florida campus when you're in New Mexico and you're watching someone do something. That's not the same. Yeah. So we have faculty on both campuses. I'll be providing instruction. But Florida and New Mexico are going to be able to share the experience. And I think it's going to create a really good experience for students coming in for this inaugural class this year. I'm super thrilled for them.
Yeah, so I just want to make a clarifying point for the student listening to this. The distinction here with this new campus is that it, from an accreditation standpoint, is an extension of the New Mexico campus. It's not a new accreditation, so they don't have to wait 4 years to graduate a class to get fully accredited. And that's oftentimes a confusing thing. So for students, they're always worried, like, hey, this is a new school.
Yeah.
Do I have to be concerned that they only have preliminary accreditation versus full accreditation? This new Florida campus is piggybacking kind of off of the New Mexico campus, which means kind of changes that you make in New Mexico have to be kind of mirrored in Florida. And that's just kind of an administrative decision that you all made at some point to say, hey, we want these campuses to be in sync. And it's an easier process to get accredited too. So,
and I never hold it against a student to not understand accreditation
because,
oh my goodness, it's wild. But yeah, so it is an extension. It is an additional location, not a branch campus.
Yep.
And so because of that, while that campus is not approved for Title IV or federal financial aid right now, we have a shorter time period and when we can drop that application than a new school would. And so while we don't have that offered currently, we're able to offer that hopefully sooner if the Department of Education reviews the application and everything. We're hoping to speed up that timeline a little bit. So it really does put us in a good spot. And then in addition, we started clinical rotations in Florida in that area a couple of years ago before a campus was ever there.
Oh, nice.
We didn't just knock on the door and say, hey, we're going to build a medical school here, come to the community. We started that process early, so we have the foundation laid for our students to work with local preceptors.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I am concerned about that area with UCF, Burrell's new school, and then there's another, Orlando College of Osteopathic Medicine, right? That's not you all, correct?
Correct.
Yeah,
not us.
So it's confusing because now there's three medical schools in a relatively close area, mm-hmm. proximity, and it's a very big population there. And but yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. Austin, thank you so much for your time. For the student listening to this as we wrap up, what words of wisdom or encouragement do you have for them as they either are entering their application cycle or maybe coming out of a unsuccessful application cycle?
Yeah, I say be judicious with the feedback you receive. Understand who's providing that feedback. If it's someone who this is what they do, that's going to be different than someone who maybe applied through the cycle as well and doesn't understand the ins and out of the process. I think there's valuable feedback from all areas, but I really encourage students to filter that the best they can and really understand where that person is coming from and weigh that feedback, because so many times I see students that put so much emphasis on what their classmate did. Well, they got in and I didn't. Mm-hmm. Therefore, I must mirror them. And I don't want a duplicate of the student next to you. I want you to be who you are. And so my biggest encouragement is to take a deep breath and just go for it. It's a scary process. It's an intimidating process. But lean on any resources you have. And for us in particular, if a student applies after the cycle, those advising appointments can prove really beneficial if there's someone that does not get selected to matriculate into our class.
All right, so there you have it. Again, Austin from Burrell College of Osteopathic Medicine. He is in Las Cruces, New Mexico. Burrell is opening another campus, or has opened another campus in Florida as well. But Austin is at the New Mexico campus, and is a great conversation, great discussion about medical school admissions from his point of view. I hope you found this helpful. I hope it eased some concerns or gave you some hope. Whatever it did, I hope you enjoyed it. If you want some help with your application to DO school, MD school, any medical school, we don't really separate them. We consider them all the same because at the end of the day, you become a physician. We have a small team of advisors, amazing advisors over at medical school headquarters, and we can help you with your applications, whether it's essays, interview prep, your whole application process, just answering some questions. One of our team members actually is Courtney Lewis, who before Austin was the director of admissions at Burrell College of Osteopathic Medicine. So We have an amazing team that can help you with your applications and now even help you with your residency applications. That is new, as we have invited and added a new team member to our team who had that experience at Mount Sinai. So come join us, Medical School HQ. Use the promo code PMY to save a little bit of money. Have a great week. We'll see you next time here on the Pre-Med Years.
This is MedEd Media.